you dirty dogs. It's Big Dog, Ball Talk, Matt Ankorn, and Jordan Flegel giving you takes that make you quake. Cannot wait to get into today's episode, Jordan. Lots to talk about in the NBA playoffs, lots to recap. But before we go into all of that, obviously, I think you'd like to address the nation, address the people, and maybe congratulate me on becoming the winner of our $50 bet. Once again, you are 0-2 in backing the Sacramento Kings to make the playoffs, and you were also not able to guess the correct winner of every single first-round matchup. I'm still yet to be paid. If you'd like to shame Jordan Flegel publicly, get out of that Big Dog Ball Talk and tell us why he should be ashamed of himself. But Jordan, yeah, would you like to give your final closing words and statements about being this year's loser, ending your historic and only winning streak in our long-running $50 bets?
I don't think it's the only one, Matt. You can try and twist history. No. I've got a lot of wins on the board.
We're not sure about that.
The only
Big
thing
Dog
I'll
Ball
say,
Talk Monkey, check the board.
What was his name? Blugan Clamley or whatever.
Yeah, Brogan Clamley.
Yes. He owes me a lot of money, so just get him to pay you, and then it'll all even out. Just in this
yeah,
case.
But then he's going to say Mikal Jordan or Tyler Bistro owes him money, and then I'm just going to be walking around, and it's going to roundabout come back to you or producer Alex.
Or just come back to you that you owe one of that. That's how that's how they say all
Never.
The debt in the world works. Like he owes him, and it comes back to you, and we all just move on. Anyway, you'll get your money someday, Matt. Maybe we'll see.
We'll see.
If you were a nice guy, you'd give me another chance. Maybe
no,
like
I
predict
wouldn't.
All the second round.
yeah, it could be an easier chance.
Yeah,
I mean, we're gonna get into
Lakers,
it. Your future picks. Your future picks have been horrible this season, man. No offense, but they've been dog shit. It's been bad. It's been a tough year for the little pup.
They've not been great because I initially backed the Mavericks and the Sixers to get to the finals. And then when that failed, I picked the Lakers to get there. I had the Celtics going. Technically, they're still alive. My pre-playoffs Eastern conference pick is still looking okay, but the Lakers completely shit the bed, just decided to look like a terrible team, and Julius Randle just decided to look like a great playoff performer, and we'll get all into that, but you're right, you won this one fair and square. Hey, I'm in a good mood because the Leafs won, so screw it.
The Six is on a wave right now. Big win there for the Maple Leafs. Shout out to them. We will talk about them. How the second round series ends. Going up against Florida again. It's going to be a tough one. So
be fun.
Hockey fan, go ahead and check it out. If you're not, go ahead and check it out. Hockey's a great sport. Moving on to the main sport, the one that we love, the one that we want to talk about here, Big Dog Ball Talk Basketball Podcast. We are going to talk about
podcast.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the Eastern Conference playoffs first here, Jordan, because everything is wrapped up in the first round in the East. Only one series going past five games in this one, or in this year, pardon me. It's a bit of a weird feeling to have the playoffs kind of wrapped up so quickly. Like only really one series was even remotely competitive in the East, which I guess also shouldn't be too shocking given, the state the East was in. You have the 10 seed Miami fucking getting the 8 seed, the Magic, which we had no faith, coming against the Celtics, kind of a horrendous matchup for them. We thought maybe the Bucks and the Pacers would go a little longer, but you can go back to our last podcast, talking about on Monday, Damian Lillard and, his unfortunate Achilles tear and everything that was going on there. Funny to note, after Gary Trent Jr., bobbles that one out of bounds, and Tyrese Haliburton gets the clutch layup over Giannis. Tyrese Haliburton's dad gets in Giannis's face, and they were going to square up. That was scary.
That was unbelievable.
I think I saw someone say that when Giannis was like looming over him, getting in his face, it's like that's what the first guy in the 100 men versus the gorilla would look like.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, I've just become privy to this this question. We should do a whole podcast on that. Do different scenarios, bring in guests. That was crazy.
An actual. We should get the Big Dog Ball Talk.
The Big Dog
has connections to to Gorilla. He's probably
he
got a buddy.
100%.
Hangs out with a lot of orangutans, I think.
I picture the Big Dog Monkey, Ball Talk Monkey, as like a gorilla in my mind.
Really? Interesting.
I mean, he exists. We know what he looks like, but just for everyone.
Yes.
That's what that
gives off gorilla energy.
Yeah.
Big ape energy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was crazy. He's now banned from all games, which is also crazy. Like, really? I didn't think it was that, you know, I think that's maybe a bit over the top, but I suppose I get it. Like, if you're walking up to one of the most sort of powerful players in the NBA going fucking head to head with him like that,
yeah,
that's on another level. He must have, I don't know how he doesn't have more fear than that, but that was crazy. Cause at the end, it seemed like Giannis was saying like, I love you or something, or appreciate you. Like,
yeah,
he was
yeah.
walking away. I was like, wait, was this like a nice exchange? Very, very weird. And then he comes out and apologizes. I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, maybe better that he's not, you know, going up against the Cavs and all those guys next round. Cause maybe there would have been something would have escalated a little bit more. Someone's yes. dad getting beat up. Why do you come back from that?
Yeah, maybe that would have been the best finals, maybe. John, I believe his name's John Halliburton versus T. Yeah, Morant. John. That could have been something. They could have really went at it.
Awesome.
Hell,
it's dad on dad, oh my God, let that go.
I was going to say, oh my God, it's LeVar Ball. He's cashing in his contract as the basketball dad. I mean, have you ever seen that episode of South Park where they all the Little League dads fight?
No, I haven't.
That's a good one. Go check that one out. That yeah,
sounds great.
It's a great episode. Yeah, you got to check that out, the Bat Dad. But yeah, I'm mollywopping really though. I mean, game five was close, you know, it goes to overtime, but, still yeah. not enough for the Bucks to be able to pull that one out. You know, it's, you know, the Pacers moving on as they, again, I think even still are exceeding expectations, you know, even though they're coming off the Eastern Conference Finals run last year, you know, they've got a chance to maybe go back to back here. And we're chatting a little bit about them right now. So let's talk about them. Cavs versus Pacers. I mean, the Cavaliers literally put together one of the all-time biggest fucking beatdowns of all, like in a playoff series ever. Not a single game, only one game was within, you know, single digits of the lead, and that was a 9-point game. The rest of them, you know, were a 40-point blowout, a 20-point blowout, and a 50-point blowout. It was the worst series that I can recall. We barely talked about it on the podcast because there was nothing to say. The Heat were just horrible, and the Cavs were the best team in the East. It was pretty much over and done with pretty quickly. So Cavs and Pacers, Jordan, I mean, is there any angles here that you're really excited to see or looking into? Because obviously two Central Division teams going at it, lots of history between the two squads, both very young and up and coming. It's going to be interesting to see who can kind of get the upper hand in this one.
Yeah, 100%. Again, I mean, these are two sort of backcourt and frontcourt dominated teams. Like, there's not really the prototypical big wing again that we always talk about that's going to go out and dominate on either side know, in the series. There's no Kawhi Leonard, there's no Jason Tatum, so it's going to be it's going to be about backcourt play, guard play, and then who has the upper hand with their bigs. And when I'm looking at this series just broadly, it does seem like, and again, I've heard a lot of people sort of voice this and I agree, Indiana is a really good team. I really like their balance. I like, you know, that their starting five, as I've said many times, is one of my favorites in the NBA, just how it fits all together. But the Cavs just do everything that Indiana does, but just at a higher level, just a little bit better in almost every way. Like, I would say, you know, defensively and rebounding wise, the Cavs have a huge edge there. At the end of a game, if you need like a scorer on that perimeter to break things down and go get their own shot, I'd way rather have Donovan Mitchell than Tyrese Halliburton, even though Halliburton's been great. He's been great, but again, he's not, if he turns into that, oh, I'm going to be like a score first guy, it gets a little shaky. You know, he's you'd probably give him the edge of as the distributor. You know, I think the Cavs, not to mention they've got Darius Garland back there as well. And then even if you are looking at that wing spot, like, you're relying a lot on Aaron Nesmith for the Pacers, but the Cavs, where that had kind of been a weakness, if you had to throw a Coro out there all the time, or just Max Strus, it'd be like, that's a bit shaky. But now they've got DeAndre Hunter. They made that trade. They've got a big body there to play that position. And then they've got just so many guys they can rotate through. Like, even the bench, most teams, Indiana, with their deep bench, would have a bit of the upper hand. The Cavs, with Ty Jerome and all the guys that they bring off the bench, they're almost just as good. So, you know, that paired with the home court advantage, the fact that, you know, overall, I think the sort of experience factor is about even. If anything, maybe you'd give it to the Cavs a little bit, because, you know, Jared Allen and Donovan Mitchell, they've been there. Indiana in general is pretty young, apart from Siakam, and, you know, Miles Turner's been in the league for a while, but just every everything you can look at, it's like, I don't want to disrespect Indiana. They I think they've shown that they clearly, you know, separated themselves from the Bucks, even like before the Dame injury, even in the regular season. Like, Indiana deserved to be in this Final Four in the East. Yep. So they've
kind of had their number the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, 100%. But at the end of the day, I just think the Cavs do pretty much everything just a little bit better. And so, I mean, we can maybe give predictions here officially in a little bit, but I think it's going to be a tough competitive series, but I don't see the Cavs losing.
Yeah. I 100% agree. They are very similar teams, very, efficient, very high pace. Teams love to push the ball. Like, it's going to be really exciting to watch on the court. Like, we're not going to see any, 85 to 82, defensive slugfest. It's going to be 125 to 127, points every single game on each side. It's going to be a lot of action, a lot of three-pointers, probably some dinks and dumps here and there. But it's going to be a good game, good series all around. I feel like the matchup personnel-wise, really, like, when you're just talking about the best on best when it comes down the stretch of the court, or the stretch of the game, rather, like, down the floor, I don't think that the Pacers honestly match up all that well against the Cavs. Like, Miles Turner is not really, like, he's a good rim protector, can stretch the floor, that's great and all, but he's not really the fastest guy out there. Like, I think Jared Allen is a better, like, athlete, better mobile big man than Miles Turner is. And even then, when you're down low, like, Miles Turner's never been a great rebounder, other than it might have been in game 5 that he had like 12 rebounds, 14 rebounds, something crazy. 9 rebounds. Okay, but I swear he had like 5 in the first half or something. Maybe there was another game that he had a bunch of boards, but been an awesome lockdown glass cleaner in that sense. Good score, good defensive presence, but yeah, just not a rim grabber, not getting anything there off the glass. So I think that the rebounding edge is easily going to go in the favor of the Cavs. Siakam, I mean, as always, is going to be a bit of an X factor depending on how he plays. But, I mean, you got the Defensive Player of the Year and Evan Mobley there. Congratulations on him on getting it. Neither of us gave it to him in our award special. If you want to go check out who we gave all the hardware to, go check that out. Siakam, I just feel like with matched up with Mobley or Allen, like, he's just too small to really make it work, and he's crafty, but they're both very smart defensive bigs. Like, they're underrated, like, mobile speed, like, just laterally down low on the block. Like, he's going to have to really shoot the lights out and make Mobley kind of pull out of the paint to really be effective. But as we've seen in the past, like Siakam isn't exactly the most, like, he's not Mr. Consistency when it comes to his three-point shot, especially in the postseason. So I'm a little weary of, how that matchup will work out. And then long run, like you said, I mean, we're in a league dominated by, guards at this point. Tyrese Haliburton, I also don't trust to, take them all the way. Like, he's had awesome games in the playoffs. He had amazing games, down the stretch of this series to close it out. But when his jump shot's not falling, it is not falling at all. It's he'll go either 0 for 8 or he'll go 6 for 12. Like, it's no in between. So I just don't trust him enough. Whereas Donovan Mitchell, like you said, has proven himself time and time again as like a premier playoff performer. Can get buckets at will, score down the stretch of a game, very clutch. And then you sprinkle in that you've got Darius Garland as like your like third best player, versus, Andrew Nembhard being the Pacers. Like, that's a pretty stark difference.
Love Nembhard, especially in the playoffs, but different level.
Yeah, good Canadian boy, he's nowhere on that stratosphere of Darius Garland skill wise. So I'm probably a better defender. I'll give him that. But I don't see really any way for the Pacers to win this series unless like somebody on the Cavs, because like you said, even the bench is better for the Cavs. I would say the depth is superior as well. Someone like Siakam and Haliburton have to go. Kobe, Shaq, Jordan, Pippen. They have to be averaging 30 points a game each. Someone like Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland has to like just completely shit the bed. Like, it has to be both of those things. I think even if they are averaging 30 points a game, they're still going to like be neck and neck. Like, that's how good the Cavs are.
Yeah, I agree. And the Cavs offense, which has been best in the league all year, is just it's unstoppable. At least in the context that we've seen it up until now. Like, I think they are gonna. I think this is the series where the Cavs are going to be tested. Like I said, in the first round, I mean, clearly I was right about that. And it was plain to see for a lot of people that the Heat were not going to test the Cavs in any real way. Mm-hmm. The Pacers are going to test them, and we're going to see what the Cavs can do when it turns into a slog. But what I like about them is they have optionality. Like if you, I can see a scenario where Jared Allen maybe has a tough time getting on the floor at the end of games, you know, depending on how things are going game to game and just throughout the series. It is so easy for the Cavs to say, fine, we'll put Evan Mobley at the five. That might actually, yep, in the long run, be his better position anyway. And we can bring in our many options of wings from, you know, Struth, Dean Wade, Okoro, all these guys, mm-hmm, that we have.
But against the Pacers, you could play Garland, Jerome, and Mitchell at the same time. Absolutely. I mean, Aaron Naismith isn't a crazy three. He's a smaller guy at the wing.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So you have all these options versus the Pacers. They kind of sneakily don't have that many options. Like we've seen the Siakam being pushed to the five, you know, many times sort of in the Raptors, his Raptors tenure. It doesn't work as well. That's not as seamless, yeah, of a thing. Like he's a little small to do that for that many minutes. He can do it, you know, here and there, and it works fine. But they don't have that sort of version of like a death lineup that the Cavs can go to. But you know, you mentioned if someone on the Cavs is hobbled, it can maybe change things, or if they just you know, don't perform to the level we expect. Darius Garland missed, I know he didn't play game four. I forget if he even played game three, but he's dealing with a little bit of something right now. So if he's, yeah, not at 100% and the, you know, God forbid he misses a game or just is not playing well at all, and the Pacers can kind of load up on Donovan Mitchell, then you do have, you know, a bit of an issue if you're the Cavs getting enough offense, because you don't have that many, you know, creators outside of that. But then again, you look at someone like Ty Jerome. He is happy with the ball in his hands to come in and sort of fill that secondary role and take over those responsibilities from Darius Garland. Like we saw that throughout the Heat series. So the Cavs, even like worst case scenario, even if they just almost didn't have Darius Garland for this whole series, I would still give them a shot at winning with the home court advantage and,
yeah,
with the system that they have, the depth that they have. So,
we've seen Donovan Mitchell be like elite as the lead ball handler, oh, yeah, on this team without Garland in the lineup. I still think it's nice to have him, but definitely not like a deal breaker or season ender if you don't have Garland in the lineup.
Yeah, 100%. So that's why it's just like, yeah, anywhere you look, I'm like, I like the Cavs here. But all that being said, like, the Cavs haven't played real basketball that many times throughout the year. Like, they destroyed, mm-hmm, people. Like, they, and this was even going back to last year, a lot of times in the regular season. Like, obviously, they hit that offensive wall in the playoffs, and Garland had a rough year, basically start to finish. And Mobley wasn't nearly the same guy as he was this year. But, like, that system of just passing up good shots for great shots, moving that ball around, like, they destroy teams, and they're used to doing that. And they just did that, with the Heat. That wasn't a normal first round series.
No.
This is where things are going to get tight for them. And I'm excited to see how they respond. Like those first two games at home, I could see them being pretty close. And the Pacers, I think if there's one sort of edge you give them, I think they're more used to being in close games. Like going back last year, it seemed like every single game they played in the playoffs was close.
Mm-hmm.
They fumbled a lot of them, specifically in that Celtics series, but they have that experience being like, okay, we've been here before. We know sort of how to execute. Whereas the Cavs, that might be a bit of a newer thing for them. So we'll see who's better in crunch time. And that might be sort of a way that the Pacers can sneak a few wins out here. And ultimately, I wouldn't be surprised if the series goes long or to the max. But ultimately, I do think the Cavs have enough answers to get it done. But I expect really entertaining, good basketball in this one. Like, I think this is really when the Eastern Conference playoffs start, like these two and then the Celtics-Knicks series. Because like you said, aside from Knicks-Pistons, which was entertaining at times, and it was pretty close for a six-game series. This is when the real fun starts. So yeah, either way, I'm excited to see how this plays out, because this is a heavyweight tilt when it gets down to it.
Well, let's throw out our official predictions here, Jordan. I mean, we both had the Cavs beating the Pacers in the second round. That was in our full playoff preview. You know, that was our pick. I'm sticking with it. Cavs, I part of me wants to go Cavs in five, honestly, but I do think that, you know, like as far as from what I've seen with the Garland toe issue, like it's apparently just something he's going to be having to play through for the entirety of the playoffs. I'm assuming they were just resting him in that Heat series because they just knew, you know, like it doesn't fucking matter. The Heat are so dog water. So I think he'll play through it. I mean, it's a toe injury. It can't be like, can't throw just him off that off. Much. So I still think that they could win it in five. I'm going to go six. I'm going to go Cavs in six just because I will give the Pacers enough credit that when they get hot, they are really hard to stop. And since these two teams play very similarly, I could see them, you know, making it interesting at times. But I don't really feel like the Pacers will ever be in the driver's seat. I feel like everyone, it's going to be a comfortable Cavs win in six, which I know is kind of weird to say, but like, even if it's tied 2-2 after the first four, I don't think anybody's going to be like, yeah, the Pacers have been outplaying the Cavs. I think it's still going to be clear the Cavs are the better team in that matchup. So I'm going to go Cavs in six, but I really would be shocked if it goes five. I don't think it's going any longer than six, though.
Well, Matt, I'm gonna zag. I'm going Cavs in seven, mainly because, you know, I always pick with my heart. Look where the Lakers are at right now. My finals pick.
You love LeBron.
I actually do. He had you see, he got freaking an MCL sprain or partial MCL sprain of that run in with when he hit DiVincenzo and just collapsed.
I'm not gonna lie, like, why are you? That shit looked like doing? A flop.
It did because he didn't. It was just like that shouldn't have even been a foul on DiVincenzo. They both weren't really looking, but apparently some he had a knee thing there. So he's got all offseason to deal with that. Get better soon, King. I'm gonna root for former Raptor Pascal Siakam. Andrew Nembhard, Canadian. Ben Mathurin, Canadian. This team that I really like. My guy I've been pulling for years, Miles Turner. It's too much hate, mainly from you and others.
The real ones remember the Sabonis versus Miles Turner debates. Those were always heated in the season one of Big Bubble Talk.
I'm telling you, if you still give me the option, it's a conversation.
That may be a rare take.
But I'm going to root for these guys, and I'm gonna say you guys can push it to seven. You're not going to win. I think if it does go seven, it's sort of a situation where, you know, you tip your cap to the Pacers. They pulled out some close games, and then game seven will be a classic, like, 80s home game seven, like, absolute slaughter. That would be my, you know, super specific prediction. But, you know, my mind said Cavs in six, and you're right. I agree with you. I would not be surprised if the Cavs just go up a level, do it, and, you know, get it over within five. But I'm going to say seven officially here. And I'm also rooting for it just to go seven, just for the fun of it. Cause a game seven in the second round is absolutely gangbusters. That's my pick.
Well, we need more game sevens. We're going to talk Clippers and Nuggets in a little bit here. And hopefully, you know, the Rockets can extend it a little bit against the Warriors. By the time you listen to this, the game's probably over. So let us know how that went.
Let's go Rockets. Yeah, good win.
Yes. Hopefully. Yeah. We need more game sevens. I think that it should be a good one. We'll see how it turns out. This really is the feels like real basketball, real playoff basketball being played right now. Like I'm getting horny. I'm getting antsy for this one, man. I want to see it. So let's move on to the next series here, though, Jordan. Before we talk about Celtics versus Knicks, what many picked as the Eastern Conference Finals this year, especially after the big moves that the Knicks made specifically for this matchup to come in the playoffs, which they are very lucky that it finally did happen, because it would have been funny if they did all these ads to get Mikhail, to get Kat, and then they never actually
and they lose to the Pistons.
Yes, and that was almost the case. I mean, the Pistons, they fall in six. My Pistons, damn. But it was a good series. Respect to the young gun Pistons.
They lost were close. Like, they lost heartbreakers.
Yeah. Yep. And again, we talked about it, a little bit of a controversial call in a lot of those games, you know, down the stretch. But, you know, Brunson, he's going to burn. And that's kind of what happened in game six. And unfortunately, Brunson the Pistons are packing their bags. And that's it. But again, for the Pistons this season, like, we didn't have, I don't think either of us said they had any chance to make the playoffs. I believe we both projected them to be one of the worst teams in the East again. Yep. I think we had Cade right under the microscope, right on the hot seat. And, you know, he lived up to all the hype. He looks like he's going to be perennial All-NBA type of guy throughout the rest of his career. They've got so many good pieces. Schroeder seems to be working out for them. It looks like a good fit there. Next season, they're going to get Jaden Ivey back. Malik Beasley having one of the best years of his career. Jalen Duren, Tobias Harris having a resurgent year. Like, honestly, I think at this point I got to say, shout out to Tobias Harris. Shut up a lot of people this year. He had an awesome season. Yep. And then he's still got the freaking the good twin, Stuart Thompson. And I don't mean that as in he's the better of the two, Amon Thompson, the evil twin, yes. Which is maybe yes. An early contender for best nickname in the NBA currently. But yeah, they've got so many good pieces, so many great veterans. They might just be one or two good signings, draftees, and we could be seeing an actual new rising contender in the East. But we got to see it happen before we can put that tag on them, because we also thought maybe that was the case with the Magic, and that really hasn't trajectored the way that we thought it would. So we'll keep an eye on all this. But shout out to the Pistons. Awesome season. A lot of fun to watch the Pistons this year, which is something we haven't been able to say in like 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. And they they had that game in their grasp. I think it was 110-105 they were leading and mounted a comeback at home in that game six.
They're down double digits early. And I was like, shit, the Knicks are wrapping this up. And then, they stormed back. They showed fight. Showed heart.
They did. They did. And, if they had a little bit more experience in that spot, if Cade was a little bit more seasoned, I don't think they let the Knicks back into it. And even on that last play, like, Ausar Thompson, my pet peeve is when guys guard the ball handler, like, so tight, like no breathing room when they're at half court. Like back up just like a step. I understand playing a guy so he can't just dictate where he goes, but back up a step so you're not so close that he can be shaken off, which is exactly what Jalen Brunson did. Just drove into him, a little sort of, hesitation, pull back to the side, and ultimately got a wide open three, which, Ausar Thompson, both Thompson twins, like you said, have shown that they're already some of the best perimeter defenders in the league. And fucking defensive player of the year and all defensive teams down the line. Those guys are fucking monsters. I really didn't see this coming for both of them. I thought the lack of a jump shot was really going to be an issue, but it feels like the whole NBA community, they're like two of my favorite guys to watch in the entire league. They play so hard. Easily. They're so they're so exciting. So yeah, just shout him out. Overall, I think he showed himself to be, really ready for that sort of playoff moment, even though he had a couple rough shooting games there, and overall great defense. But yeah, that last play, that was a rough one. On the other hand, it's Jalen Brunson, clutch player of the year. He's going to find a way to score. He had another fucking really tough bucket when he was weaving under the basket on Schroeder that didn't even know how he got that one to go in. So he was great. Shout out the Pistons to push this to six at all. A lot of people weren't giving them a shot. I was about to look like a smart man. My Knicks in seven pick, I thought was sort of going to become a reality. But they're a young team who won. How many games did they win last year? 12. Like the fact that they were in this series and that close to forcing a deciding game seven, against a pretty experienced and talented team, just shows how far they've come. And the only other sort of thing that unfortunately I'm thinking of when we just talked about the Cavs with fucking Evan Mobley, who just won Defensive Player of the Year. We're talking about Cade, who's leading his team, to a super respectable sort of first round exit.
Uh-oh. I know where this is
going. Looking at Scotty, and it's like, I know he's Rookie of the Year, but he's next year he better fucking close the gap, because now the gap between those two guys and him, and even was Jalen Green that draft class too?
Yeah, he was number two, and then Suggs was three.
Suggs is a different story. But Jalen Green, he did have 38 points though in the playoffs a few games ago.
I don't know if he's cracked 10 since then.
That's true. And hey, maybe who knows? He might go into Golden State in game six. We're recording here Friday afternoon. In a few short hours, he might go and force a game seven himself. But
he has that potential.
He does. But and I know we're getting off topic here, but we haven't talked about the Raptors in a while. But Scotty, it's a rough look, and I understand he doesn't have a good team around him. These things don't happen linearly. Scotty looked, after winning Rookie of the Year, he was in the playoffs and looked fairly good in that Sixers series. So I'm not saying all is lost, but I just can't help but think that when you've got those other two main guys from the draft class doing just so well in a playoff context. Shout out the Pistons and the Knicks. We're about to get into it with the Celtics and their matchup with them, but I do not feel good about the Knicks coming out of that series. I mean, I know I want to give a lot of credit to the Pistons, but they almost blew this fucking thing. They could have easily straight up flat out lost this series. Like, I think going up to, since the Pistons were leading in game six, I could be wrong maybe about, I forget exactly how game five played out, but the Pistons were, had a lead in the fourth quarter of almost every game, if not every game, this series. Like, the Pistons were there, and the fact that the Knicks didn't have like a single, we're blowing you out, like this is it, we're taking control of this game against such a young team that had never done it before, just not a great look. So I don't come away feeling that good about the Knicks, to be honest. You know, they got the performances they needed at the right times. Cat was the big one, in the last game, and then Brunson and Bridges had great games here in game six. But overall, it's tough with the way that they finished the regular season, how they've struggled in this series, and the fact that they literally did not beat a single one of the league's best teams, 0-7 or whatever they were. It's hard to feel that good about the Knicks. But that being said, again, it's like, I think the Knicks kind of tend to play down or play up to their competition. I think that's sort of one of their flaws. And so I think they are going to get up and, you know, give the Knicks, give the Celtics, at least a bit of a run for their money. But I could see a lot of sort of unhappy Knicks fans coming out of that series despite the win.
Yeah, 100%. And before we, fully switch over there, because I wanted to talk with the Raptors when you brought it up, I'm itching. Just want to say, I don't care what Scotty Barnes, because we're trading Scotty, Achai Baji, and Grady Dick.
Yeah, running the machine. I was running the trade machine today. Happening. I was like, how are we going to do this?
Get some Packers shit going there, Scotty. Yeah. I'll send you a sweater, buddy. Sayonara. We need Giannis in Greek Town.
All the stuff from years ago. It's like, oh, Masai and Giannis. They've got a history. All the connections. Look at all the Greek fans that come to the Raptors games. It's all. I'm gonna torture myself all over again.
Yes. Track the planes. Everybody knows the Toronto media is good at that. Moving on though to the Celtics and Knicks. Everything you said, I 100% agree. I think that I am fully less confident in the Knicks. Like, we both had it being Celtics-Knicks coming into the second round. Yeah, I am less confident in the Knicks than I was before. I know that they built this team and they think that it's like they're such a wing-dominant team, so we're going to have all these guys who are wing stoppers. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's good, but can they score? Not really.
No.
Especially when the sake of, you know, they've got like the best two-way players pretty much in the fucking league all on one team. Like, Mikal Bridges, still that trade, like the longer like we look at it, like four first round picks for that guy. And crazy. he is an above average role player. He's a starter on any team, but he is not an all-star. His stats and everything got so inflated in his little tenure in Brooklyn when they were like his time there as the guy. They were the worst team in the league. They went and played that. They got gifted that series because that was the groundwork had already been laid from the KD and Harden led team. So they got the 7 seed against the Sixers, and then they got fucking smoked. It wasn't even a series. And now you kind of have him. Your whole future is mortgaged pretty much on this season alone, like working, because then you're gonna have to start paying some of these guys too.
Yeah,
I just don't see any way that the Knicks win this series. Well, I really
question,
don't.
Matt, just quick question about that, because I just had the thought right now, and it's obvious to me, but like, even on the defensive side of the ball, you're supposed to have OG and Mikal Bridges as potentially the best like wing defensive duo in the league, or at least that was the thought. Would you rather have them as a defensive, strictly defensive duo, or Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown as a strictly defensive
Tatum
duo?
And Brown, not even a question. Like, so OG, it's like, might be the best of the four at like just being a strip defender, but like I think you could make the argument that Jaylen Brown is a better defender than OG, and
even
he's
Tatum,
a way better offensive player.
Even Tatum, at this point, like, Tatum is so underrated because he does so much offensively. But yeah, I feel the same way. And yeah, if you throw in the offense, it's not even a competition. So it's like, you're built to beat the Celtics team. You're not as good as them if you just look at it in that way.
And again, you go to the guard play. Same thing. We preached and talked about all last season, all this season. Jalen Brunson is your offense. You have to have him go off. He has to play 40 minutes. He's going to be fucking sucking air. You're going to have him on the oxygen tank. have the arena defibrillator out, because playing him 44 minutes against Jrue Holiday and Derek White, like, good luck, man. Really, honestly. Yep. Like, I, I just don't. And then on the other side, he can't fucking guard worth a lick. The Celtics are going to pick and roll him to death. Like, he's going to get mismatch after mismatch. It doesn't matter who's setting the pick. Doesn't matter who's handling the rock. They are going to destroy them in those mismatches. Yep. And then you go down low. It's like Kat and Porzingis. Like, that's actually a very interesting matchup. Very similar styles, you know, stretch bigs. Porzingis, obviously, a lot better on the defensive side, rim protecting. But, you know, Kat, the better rebounder and a low post scorer. Yep. But, like, Kat's going to have trouble dealing with Porzingis, like the guy of that size and length, like, and he can move a little bit. Like, it's going to be tough. He's going to drag Kat to the perimeter. He's going to have to make him run around, which, you know, we saw last year. Kat has proven us somewhat wrong that, you know, he can kind of move out there. He can move his feet a lot better than he used to. But yeah. I still just don't see any way that, like, this works for them. He's going to have a tough time scoring down low. He's going to have a tough time finding his shot. Like, that Kat maybe is like the only chance, because again, Porzingis hasn't been like this like insanely like gifted or like world eater. You know, he kind of looked like he might grow into you know, his first couple of years in the league, but like, he's still such a good player. He's like a borderline all-star on a loaded team. If he played on almost any other roster, like, he would still be in that conversation firmly. Like, I kind of feel the same way with the Cavs and Pacers. Like, I just think the Celtics are, like, the Knicks are good, very similar built teams, very similar play styles, but the Celtics are just a little bit better than them in every single way. Depth, don't, like the Celtics aren't exactly like the deepest team in the league, but like, you have
neither are the Knicks. The
no, and that's the thing. You have the sixth man of the year in Peyton Pritchard, and like, he's way better than Miles McBride. He's way better than Cameron Payne. You got Mitchell Robinson coming off the bench. Like, Al Horford, no, like, I'm not even joking. Like, actually might be their, like, the second best bench player in the series. Like, he might be better than anyone that the Knicks can roll out. Like, he's still, even at like whatever, 38, 39 years old, can barely move his feet. He knows how to play the game of basketball. So smart, stretches the floor so well. Like, and then you just have like Sam Hauser that comes in there, Luke Kornet, these guys who just play good defense. They shoot the three. Like, I'm not even worried about this series. I hope that it goes a little longer than, you know, we're expecting. Because again, Celtics, like, Boston versus New York rivalry is awesome. I'd love to see this.
Awesome.
You know, it's going to be good scenes. It's going to be a lot of heated fan interactions, I'm sure. But the Celtics are the defending world champs for a reason, man. And yeah, I know the Knicks, you built this team to beat the Celtics, but you're not beating the Celtics.
No, I don't think so. I don't think a lot of people, even Knicks fans, you ask them, like, I don't think anyone feels that confident because the Knicks just haven't shown it, like, the back half of the year. Like, there were stretches through the year where there, you know, you started to feel really good about this team. But, like, I said it right from the beginning. Okay, you want to be like the Celtics? The Celtics' whole deal is dribble drive, kick out, find open threes. That's the whole point.
Shoot more threes than anyone in the league.
Yep, and but to get the open three, you need guys who can break down a defense off the dribble. That is not OG, especially not against this great Celtics team. That is not Mikal Bridges. That is not anyone other than Jalen Brunson. You would honestly, I would argue that you actually would play more like the Celtics and have a better chance to beat the Celtics if you had a player like Dante DiVincenzo who can break, like, who can dribble a little bit. Like, that was, he was just such a big part of their playoff offense and just their team in general last year. And everyone's like, oh, obviously with throwing DiVincenzo, we're going to get Kat. We have this, you know, we finally have this, you know, skilled big man that we've been wanting for so long. People forgetting already there was a lot of pressure on Jalen Brunson. It's all on him now. And that's just, it doesn't produce the same efficient offense that like a team like the Celtics or like a team like the Cavs can produce, where it looks really good and you got the ball flying around, you can get easy baskets. Like, I think everything's going to be really, really hard for the Knicks. And even if you want to say, oh, we're going to hang our hat on defense, you've got Kat there on the back line. He's not exactly, you know, the best big man defender in the world. I know last year he stood up Jokic pretty well and was a big part of that Timberwolves defense, but still, he's nobody's great rim protector or guy who can sort of cover up for things on the back line. So even though the Knicks are built to defend the Celtics, like, I actually don't think the Celtics are going to have that much trouble scoring on these guys and getting up their threes that they want. And then, offensively for the Knicks, I don't think it's going to be that easy for them to get much going. The Celtics, I mean, classically, this has kind of been the case with them for a couple years, like I think they would have to beat themselves and make mistakes to lose this series. I don't think even if the Knicks play like top tier, if the Celtics play approaching their top tier, it's just it's not even close. And
those Knicks fans, they got to get in Tatum's head. That's their best chance.
Well, yeah, the Bing Bong boys got to do a lot of heavy lifting. And you know that is a true home court advantage, and I think that is going to sort of tilt things when the series shifts to New York. And you know, I think again, there's going to be good games in this series. Even if you look like back last year, the sweep that the Celtics put on the Pacers, like I think a fully healthy Knicks team last year probably beats the Pacers. And if the Pacers performed that well against the Celtics, maybe you can say, oh, maybe the Knicks have an even better chance this year with their rabid crowd and just having Jalen Brunson. Like, you know, I could see a scenario where this series does go a little bit long, but again, like you said, it's very similar to the Cavs thing. I would just, unless there's an injury or some crazy thing happens, I would be shocked if the Celtics lose to this team because they just haven't shown it. I haven't seen that next level, to show that they're a conference finals worthy team. It's just at the end of the day, too much pressure on Brunson. One thing that could maybe shift it is if Kat steps up and is like, plays the best basketball he's ever played. And is like, this guy who can, you know, work his sort of fake dribble handoffs and really, become more of an off the dribble threat. But again, Kat's a 7-footer. Like, I don't really think that's, even necessarily how the Knicks want to use him in this series. So, I just think they've sort of tricked themselves into thinking that they can go out and, with OG and Mikal Bridges on the wings, like, I understand those guys might have like 35 point nights against the Trailblazers in the regular season, but I wouldn't be surprised if those two guys look quite bad. And you have a lot of Knicks fans saying, why the hell did we give up so much for these guys and pay them we paid them? Because they're going to get ripped on the perimeter. They're going to try and drive. And one of those great four defenders, on the perimeter for Boston is going to, blow things up again and again. And I just think it's I can sort of see that playing out so clearly. Whereas, on the Celtics side, they're seasoned. They're going to have a tough time going up against those two guys. But ultimately, those are perennial all-star players that are going to figure it out and find a way to get their points. Jalen Brunson, as he can play all the hero ball he wants, he can have 35 points in every game in this series. I still think they lose ultimately.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to give my official prediction. I'm going to go Celtics in six. I think the Knicks can probably still pull out a couple wins. I think it's going to be competitive enough. I know I'm kind of, I was kind of shitting on the Knicks a little bit there, but like it's not really as much to do about them not being a good team. It's just that the Celtics are so much better at everything the Knicks are good at. So I'm going Celtics in six. I feel pretty confident about it. Again, I hope that it's just there are close games, competitive finishes. As long as it's a fun series to watch, I'll be happy. A game seven between these two teams would be legendary. I would love to see it, but I don't know if it'll go that long. I feel pretty confident with Celtics in six. They'd be able to go in MSG and shut up that crowd, I think, in a closeout game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, I think that's what I would go with if I had to put money on it, probably. But this is fun. This is supposed to be fun, by the way, man.
Just kicking around. Just shit, talking shit.
I'm going to go Celtics in five. I am imagining Celtics win the first two games. Maybe the Knicks win game three in like a close one. But I think the Celtics steal one of those next two. In New York and then come back home and close it out in game five. I would like it to go longer. And I think the games themselves will be good, much, much like that Pacers series last year that the Celtics had. But I just at the end of a close game, that the defensive pressure that they're going to put sort of just squeeze the Knicks to the point where I trust the shot making of the Celtics and the ability to get it done, just that bit more. And I think they can wrap it up in five. I'd be happy if it goes longer. Yeah, like you said, game seven would be fun, but I'm going to go five.
Yeah, I don't hate the pick. I consider it as well. I'm giving a little more respect to the Knicks that they can do that. Yeah. But yeah, we wouldn't be shocked whatsoever if that ended up being the final there. Yeah. But as we're waiting still to see who's going to face off in the Western Conference second round, no matchups locked up there yet with the Oklahoma City Thunder waiting, as we've already discussed on the podcast. Let's talk about, we talk about a little bit of the lead off of the show, Jordan. Minnesota Timberwolves laying the smackdown on your championship pick, the Lakers, in five. It was a close game five, but you know, no matter what the refs were giving the Lakers, because that honestly, like, I was watching it on mute, and it was like there were just some calls I was like, I couldn't fucking believe the
of foul trouble
was going on. Yeah, it was whack. Yes. Like, Jaden McDaniels did not deserve to be fouled out of that game. That was absurd.
He did make some dumbass of reaches and things, but yeah, some of the calls were a bit much. And you know, Luka and LeBron knew it. They were working the officials, flopping a little bit.
Oh, but, yeah. Well, I mean, we all predicted it, though, that the way this would go would be Rudy Gobert getting a 27-point, 24-rebound, dominating game. Like,
oh, yes.
It's just crazy. Like, I don't know. Do you think that, like, Chris Finch went up to him after and was like, hey, Rudy, I don't know if you know this, but in the modern NBA, you could pretty much do this against every single fucking team in the league. Like, there's like 2-3 teams you couldn't do this to. Like, this should be a lot more routine for Rudy Gobert. Obviously, he was just on fire, and the Lakers were playing Dorian Finney-Smith as a center, so it was just
maybe
not even close.
What a surprise. You don't play Jackson Hayes a single minute, and Rudy Gobert goes off. JJ, I'm watching you, JJ. Freaking
it was stupid.
And normally I'm happy to see Maxi Kleber, but he hasn't played in about 5 months, if that, maybe even more. So that was a little shocking.
In the fourth quarter, I was like, I actually did a double take. I was like, what the fuck?
What? I didn't even know he was ready. He would have been great to have, though, actually folded into that team. That was kind of a missing part of it. But yeah, the Lakers, They fully tricked me. I mean, it's kind of like the Suns last year, and it's funny that it's the Timberwolves that knocks both of those teams out. You know, the Lakers that won with Luka sort of the back half of the year did not look like the team that they trotted out there in this five-game series. Like, they actually moved the ball. They actually ran things. They actually, were a team that played the guys that they had on their bench every once in a while. They had sort of different combinations. They had guys that looked relatively fresh, like they were ready to go out there and compete. And this year, in this series, it just looked like everyone was walking through the mud. Luka mainly, like, laboring as if he has an injury that we don't really know about. Like, he just clearly never got in shape. Post trade, didn't look athletic in the least. And I know he normally
Nico
doesn't.
Was right.
Well, Nico is looking pretty good right now. LeBron, such an up and down series. Like, he had some good scoring games, but I don't think he really put his stamp on it.
Stretch.
Yeah, and just everything was so difficult for the Lakers. Everything on offense, and I think they were trying to play like that. They were trying to game the system and just say, oh, we're gonna just pick on this matchup and we're gonna do this, and like, they were almost too smart for their own good. Like, and JJ, I put in that same camp. Like, this fucking super brain threesome of JJ, Luka, and LeBron, just play basketball. Play the guys you have on the bench. Move the ball around. Run some things. Trust in the guys that you have, and maybe the series would have been different. Like, I think made a lot of the wrong decisions. Ultimately they are and were, and everyone could see it, a flawed team. Like, Jackson Hayes is not, the starting caliber center. And there were a lot of other missing pieces, but
imagine if they had Mark Williams.
Well, yeah, I think things could have,
but they didn't play Dalton Connect in the playoffs anyways. Wouldn't have been a big loss.
Exactly. And well, that's another thing. You don't even play the guy, who's your fucking, oh, we can't believe he fell to us in the draft. He's amazing. Like, it's just, the Lakers, with how they handled it with the team that they had on paper, this is sort of the fate that they deserved here, going out to a more experienced, more complete, deeper team. But I thought they had more in them, and I thought Luka would have more fight in him to prove the haters wrong. He was just kind of walking around out there a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Nico, maybe you were right. But ultimately, shout out the Timberwolves. They played everything perfectly. They sort of did the opposite of what the fucking Lakers did the whole time. They stuck with the guys, like I said last pod, even though Rudy got embarrassed a few times, and he always will, he was a monster in this game, and he was a monster throughout the series. And they played all their different guys to the point where everyone was kind of fresh in fourth quarters. Anthony Edwards was primed to sort of take over at the end of the games when LeBron and Luka, who had been playing the entire fucking game, were kind of on a downward trajectory. Ant had his little bit of rest and he could come in and dominate, which he did. So shout out the Timberwolves. The Lakers, they need to lick their wounds, come back, actually fill out the team, and then, you know, we'll evaluate them next year. And it kind of seems like now in hindsight, maybe Luka is just one of those players that only gets it done every second year, because he makes the conference finals in 2022. Then the whole, when Kyrie was first traded there, they don't even make the playoffs. They tank for Derek Lively. That's that. And then last year, they make it to the fucking, 2023. Am I getting the years right? Last year, they make it to, the finals, as everyone knows. And then maybe this is the down year. So maybe it'll be next year where Luka actually says, okay, time to actually try again this time. And then we're really approaching like a LeBron, last dance type of situation.
Confident about it.
Yeah, I think so too. I kind of thought he would show more fight ultimately as well, thinking like, this might be my last chance here. We've got Luka, we've got a decent team. So, I was wrong. I'll fully admit that. But I do think I sort of underestimated the Wolves a little bit. They looked great. And yeah, I thought Julius Randle would shit the bed. He did not. He was great basically every game in the series.
He was the closer in that game.
He was. And that's the last thing I'll say about this before I throw it. The Wolves looked good enough that I'm ready. I don't care what happens with the Rockets or the Warriors tonight or Game 7. I think the Wolves are making the conference finals again. I think they're beating my side now. That was my call. They just convinced me. I think they're beating either one of those teams, whoever makes it out of that Rockets Warriors slugfest. I think they're going to the conference finals. And then that gets a little juicy. I think they're going to run up against the Thunder, who are, I think, better ultimately. But those teams always play pretty tight games. So, the Timberwolves really, really impressed me. They look great.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you finally get on this bandwagon. I've been talking up the Wolves to you since the off season. So really happy to see them get some respect. But yeah, just talking about the game itself, like Game 5, you're in a hostile environment. I get it, but this was like the perfect winnable game for the Lakers.
It was
if they just were one able to box out a little bit. I mean, 18 offensive rebounds allowed in this matchup. But the biggest thing, and like I actually had to like I looked at the box score after the game, and I had to I went to bed and I woke up the next day and I went, there's no fucking way Anthony Edwards shot 0-for-11, right? I go and look through the box score. Nope. Yep. He went 0-for-11. He actually, Matt's gambling corner. He busted my parlay. I needed him to hit 2 threes and I would have won a couple $100. Shout out to Ant. This was like they shot 7-for-47, 15% as a team. Yep. If you in today's modern NBA, 47 times you're shooting the threes, you're only hitting 7 of them. You should be destroying that team. It shouldn't even be close. Like I'm so almost dumbfounded about it. And like you said, I don't think that LeBron, like, he didn't look like he had it in him. He looked tired. Luka looked tired.
The whole series, those guys looked exhausted.
Yeah, and again, like LeBron is 40. Like, I just think that at this point, like, he can't in the playoffs do what he used to do like 10 years ago, where he could just on a switch be like, you know what, I'm taking the ball to the rack. I'm getting an and one. I'm taking a hard foul. Like, it's happening. Like, down the stretch, he was hesitant. He's pulling up for fucking fadeaways and jumpers. Like, he doesn't have that ability, especially when you're going up against like this plethora of defensive stoppers that the Timberwolves can throw at guys. Like, Julius Randle bodied the shit out of LeBron in this game.
He did.
There was no, like, and again, and then on the other side, Julius Randle had no problem just taking it pick and roll situations every single time to the cup, because they've just, again, kind of like what I was talking about with the Celtics and Knicks series, what it's going to look like. If you want to see what I was talking about with Brunson getting exposed, just look how Luka got exposed all series long with this one, or Austin Reeves. I mean, that's a backcourt. I mean, we didn't even talk about Austin Reeves there. He was fucking trash this whole series.
Reeves was so bad. I take back everything I said. I can't believe I waited to the last minute to agree with everyone, and now I'm right back where I started. In Game 5, he dribbled the ball off his foot about 5 different times. He looked like he didn't even know where he was. All-star, future all-star, my ass. Austin Reeves, like, it's on site. He's the real reason why they lost, first of all, Game 5. If he has even an average fucking game, they have a chance to win, even though the Lakers were just terrible and deserved to be down like 20 in that game, like as a unit. Yeah. But Austin Reeves was just so noticeably terrible. And to come out, they came out with such horrible energy. Yeah, whatever the opposite of shouting out Austin Reeves, I condemn Austin Reeves for this series. maybe trade him. That's how you get your big sort of third piece in the offseason. Yeah.
Unfortunately, stock at an all-time low in that situation. But yeah, it again, I thought the Lakers would put up a lot more of a fight in this one. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of shit they need to take back to the drawing board this offseason. A lot of lessons for J.J. Redick to have learned as a coach, as we've talked about. And yeah, they desperately need some big man depth out there. Even a big man would be great for them to have. And one that you're
willing to play.
They're going to go, I'm telling you right now, do not go and pick up some fucking old ass guy off the scrap heap, because they're going to sign, they're going to go after Brooke Lopez or something. It's going to happen. Or I
like
know
Jonas.
It. And it's going to fucking suck. It's not going to work. They need a good, healthy defensive center. That's all they need, and things will work out. But we'll see if the Lakers are going to Laker. And congrats to the Timberwolves for punching their ticket there to the second round dominantly, I may add. Yeah. Moving on to the final part of today's podcast, talking a little game seven, baby. Maybe the only game seven we're gonna get. Again, knock on wood, hopefully we do get one. Hopefully the Rockets can upset at home, or on the road rather.
That's a dangerous game. The Warriors are playing, basically throwing game five there on the road to say, we'll take care of it in game six. Maybe that's gonna happen. I think they're probably
they threw the towel pretty early. I mean, they were getting fucking shellacked.
Yeah, but I don't think I think they were okay with that. I think they were trying. It's the same thing that happened in that Memphis series a few years ago, if you remember, with the whoop that trick fucking thing when they went in there. Yep. Memphis absolutely destroyed them. They came home. So I'm just other people have pointed this out. It's just be careful. You might get a Jalen Green masterclass, baby.
Yeah, it's in the playoffs you can't fuck around, especially when you're playing a young, hungry team like that.
Yep, exactly.
But the game seven that we do have in the Western Conference series, I believe we both predicted to go to seven. We were on different sides of this coin. Nuggets versus Clippers. You had the Nuggets. I had the Clippers. Coming into this game seven, dude, it was a coin toss for me coming into that series. It's coin toss for me coming down the stretch of it. Easily the best series of the playoffs so far. Only a few games have been kind of blowouts. I mean, the Clippers were in control for pretty much the entirety of this game. The final score looks a lot closer than they were. The Nuggets kind of scratched their way back and clawed back a little bit down the stretch, but the Clippers had a healthy lead for most of this game. Kind of similar to game five. It just seemed like the home team rallied around the crowd, and they were able to really come out there and just say, you know what, we need to get this win, both respectively for the Nuggets in Game 5 and the Clippers in Game 6. Going into Game 7, man, I think we're going to see a lot more what we saw in the first Game 1, 2, and 4 of the series, where it's going to be, low scoring, awesome playoff moments, Kawhi and Jokic kind of going back-to-back. I think it's going to be a really tight one. I see it being, a small, slim margin down the stretch. And once again, I'm kind of here playing both sides. My brain tells me the Nuggets, but my heart tells me the Clippers. Or maybe I get that backwards. I don't know. It's very tough. It depends on the day. It depends on the day. But it's just...
What does your groin tell you, Matt?
Michael Porter Jr.? he might have the edge in this one. Is anyone... Yeah, I don't think anyone on the Clippers really does it for me. So, okay, I might have to give it to the Nuggets on this one. Congratulations.
You like a little Christian Brown? No,
No, I told you he's the most punchable face in the
league. Yeah,
you did say that,
but that could mean a lot of things in the context. I'm looking at the line. Last I looked, the Clippers were favored, but now the Nuggets -1. So I think things are sort of moving around. But sorry, Matt, were you about to give a prediction?
No, I'm not giving my prediction yet.
You're not doing
I'm
it
just
yet.
Setting the stage because I really don't know. Like it's still a 50-50 for me. Could go either way. I really just think it's going to be an awesome game. I don't envision either team getting blown out. I'll be really upset if they do. One of the biggest things that I will be watching, because he had a good game one, he had a good game six, but James Harden, he has to step up, because the rest of the series he has been pretty so-so. Obviously has a really rough track record in the postseason, so it's really going to depend on him. Jamal Murray has looked awesome. Playoff Murray, he always gets up for these big games. It's going to be an interesting one. Westbrook has been solid off the bench in most of these games. I believe it was game five. Maybe he only had 3 points or something, or game four. One of them, he had a bit of a stinker, but he's looked solid.
He didn't play one game. I think it was game three that they lost. Yep, he didn't play.
Yep. Yeah, so it's going to be a really, really interesting game seven, and it's going to be one of those classics where it's like every possession, like you're on bated breath seeing what's going to happen. And so I'm really looking forward to how this one plays out.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's crazy to look back in this series. The Clippers were a millisecond, or what's even, I don't know what the lowest amount of time is, from being up 3-1.
Yeah, well, probably a tenth of a second.
Yeah, because that game, you know, that Aaron Gordon dunk is too late. That game goes to overtime. I'm pretty sure the Clippers have more in the tank, because they Nuggets pulled a JJ Redick and basically played their whole fucking starters that whole back half of that game for. It actually worked out for them. So yeah, it's crazy that they pulled that off and now are going into game seven here. Again, the Clippers are fresher, but the Nuggets are at home. They have the best player in the world. Yeah, Jamal Murray has just woken up these last couple games and looked really, more approaching like that guy who basically put up Kobe-level numbers in 2023 when they won the championship. So I also don't fucking know which way this is going to go. I do think it's going to be very close, even if, you know, like, If the Nuggets go up big, which they did in game seven of the second round last year against the Wolves, I give the Clippers can come back. Like, the Clippers have shown that they can close leads. They can sort of clamp down defensively, really, really get back into these games. And I think the opposite is true as well. Like, if the Clippers come out and, really look good early on and build a lead, like, the Nuggets can come back just as quickly as anyone when you're led by Jokic. So I think however things start off, whether they're close right from the beginning, in that fourth quarter, it's going to be tight, like within a possession or two. I'm fascinated to see who executes better. But like I said, from the very beginning, I just trust Jokic more than anyone on the Clippers in these situations. Because again, like, James Harden, he's going to come and go. That's always been his thing. And like a game seven James Harden, if you want to put money on him having a good performance, I say good luck to you, sir. That hasn't worked out for many people so far. Norman Powell, he had a great game six here to force this last one, but he's not been in that situation very many times where he has to like legitimately be that third best guy on a team that's going deep in the playoffs. I think he's playing, a little bit over his head, like, even though I think he can do it. And you're looking at Kawhi, it's like, how much do you trust him to have like a vintage Kawhi performance, like when you really, really need it? And I just think ultimately, like, the Clippers, after that game three blowout, they looked like they were in the driver's seat of this series, and letting the Nuggets back in, I think, was a pretty big mistake. I think they're going to be very motivated to not, lose this game seven again at home. It, whatever it takes, if they have to play their fucking six guys that they like the entire game, they might well do that. I'm sticking with the Nuggets, but it's close, and I could 100%, like almost any game in this series, see it going either way.
Well, I think, Jordan, I'm going to stick with my original pick as well. I'm going Clippers, baby. I'm envisioning Kawhi Leonard. He's just going to say, fuck this. He's going to go off. I still, as I kind of was just thinking through it in my head as you were talking, I wasn't even listening.
I knew it.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point, Jordan. Now here's what I want to say.
True.
Very good. I'm sorry that happened, or I'm happy to hear that for you.
Yes.
But yeah, I do see Kawhi having a good game. Jokic is the best player in the world. He's the best player in the series. And I do see it being close, and it's hard to pick against the team that, we've seen have playoff success, go deep in the playoffs in recent years compared to, this Clippers team, which is, really this core, this version of the Clippers. We haven't seen them do anything in the postseason yet, especially with Zubaz and like you said, Storm and Norman there, like as the franchise key components to going deep. I still think that they have enough depth. The Nuggets have to ride out their guys 40 plus minutes, whereas the Clippers can rest, they can move guys around, they have a lot more versatile play that they can different looks they can throw at this Nuggets team. So I'm rolling with the Clippers to pull the upset off on the road, game seven, shut the entire Mile High City up. But I will say, I think it's going to be a nail biter no matter what. I'm looking forward to seeing which of these two teams punches their ticket and wins the honor to go on the road and play Oklahoma City after a dog fight. Yeah,
and game been waiting seven for series. Like a week. Oh. Yeah, crazy. That's your reward.
That's going to be tough. That first game going to OKC is going to be tough, but it's a rest versus rest type of thing. We'll see.
You're right. That's true. I think this is going to be an absolute battle. Mm-hmm. I'm looking, I think maybe my X factor in this game is Aaron Gordon, because if he can shut down Kawhi, or at least slow Kawhi down to enough, and then himself hit a few threes. Like, when Aaron Gordon's hitting his threes, the Nuggets are incredibly difficult to beat. And you know, you've got all these other things that may or may not happen. James Harden may or may not play well. Jamal Murray may or may not play well. Russell Westbrook, is Chris Dunn going to, you know, contribute and hit his shots and all these things. Nick Batum, is he going to play well? But I think Kawhi is the bellwether, the head of the snake for the Clippers. And if Aaron Gordon can impact what he does as that primary defender, then I think the Nuggets are going to be in good shape. But yeah, I'm expecting a real close one down the stretch. And we've got Kawhi. Wait, hold on. I'm just thinking. Oh no, I was going to say the last time Kawhi was in a game seven, if that would have been the shot in Toronto. But no, these two teams played game seven in the motherfucking bubble when Denver came back from 3-1 and sent their asses home. So this is the game seven rematch. We'll see if Denver can do it again.
Well, everybody, let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk what you think is going to happen game seven of the Nuggets versus Clippers. We also want to see your picks for the first round, or the second round, pardon me, of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Let us know who you like between the Celtics and Knicks and the Cavs versus the Pacers. Give us a show. And also, because you're from the future, let us know how you enjoyed watching the Rockets and Warriors game.
Rockets dominate the Warriors. Hopefully, game seven, number two, baby.
I don't want to jinx anything. I'm knocking on wood here. We're a pro Rockets podcast right now. Yep. Anti-Warriors. Until the day we die. But give us a follow at Big Dog Ball Talk. Instagram, TikTok, X, Facebook, for little old X heads out there. And let us help you, help us, help you, help the podcast.
And give us 5 stars too. That's another thing. If you like the podcast, everything, wherever you're listening.
Download the episodes. Reviews. Don't just listen. Download them.
Subscribe as well. Then you'll get our podcast right in your feed. Because as we know, we say Mondays and Fridays, but we're often, few days off that. Always twice a week though. Tardy. Mostly.
Yes. Mostly. Always. Mostly, most of the time. Always twice.
Yeah. We get it done.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is one thing with the big dogs. We get it done. Mm-hmm. And we want to get it done with you. So give us a follow at Big Dog Ball Talk. Until next time. This has been Big Dog Ball Talk. Back to Jordan Flegel. And as my good friend Jordan always says,
Go Leafs go, Matt. Give me your prediction for this series against Florida. Come on. Come on, do it.
I mean, you know what? Because I don't even give a flip. I'm just going to say Leafs in seven at home.
That's what I was thinking.
They're going to do it. I mean, if you want to actually know my fucking, if I was going to put money on this shit, I'd probably take the fucking Panthers to win in like five games. But that's okay. We're going to go. We're going to ride with the Leafs, man. And hopefully they can pull this out, end this fucking curse. But really, I don't really care because the Winnipeg Jets are going to win the Stanley Cup.
You think
so? They're going to beat the Blues.
Got a big game tonight. Big game tonight. Yep. See if that goes to game seven. Show to the Oilers as well. They advance.
Yes. And fuck the Sens.